Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, I have had quite a week. I have been through Philadelphia, where one of my good friends, Pastor Collins, was being persecuted. Him and his wife, a pastor, a man of God, was being persecuted by this wicked, evil empire. We had to go. We had to go down there to let them know that we will stand up for anybody who you try to persecute without cause. We will fight. I tell you that much. I tell you, the trip was gigantic. I just got home today at 3 p.m. And I want to make sure that I was able to go on the show today. In Philadelphia, we picketed. We marched. And it was the weather was so cold that I even kind of cold. That's how cold the weather was. But nothing stopped us from helping our brothers and sisters. We have to get that through our heads. We have to move self out the way and allow us to help each other. Regardless, I know it's not favorable, not in the black community, to go out and help each other. I know we don't believe in that. But the truth of the matter is, if you're in trouble and you need help, we need to come together and help support you and bring you home any way we can. That should be our message. That should be what we be talking to people about. When you need help, you need to be able to reach out to someone and help them. We don't need all these different reasons why you shouldn't do it. All you need is one reason. And that reason is that that man needs help. Especially if you claim you are a man of God. If you say you're a man of God and don't want to help anyone, woe unto you. I tell you, I just had a ball there. I really enjoyed myself. I couldn't even say anything more than that it was just one of those situations that I would gladly do again. But we're there. We're right there. And we need all the help that we can get. On December 4th, my black brother and good friend will be released from prison after serving 47 years in prison. He will be released. And we're happy. He will be the 18th individual within the last year, in a few days, that has been released from prison. Our goal is that to leave no one behind. That's our goal. But we're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep standing up for what's right. We're going to help our brothers and sisters who need help. If they need help, reach out and touch them. Reach out and touch them. You can do that. And God will bless you. That's a promise. Not a say-so. On that note, I'm going to bring in a young lady from Detroit, Michigan, Miss Tommy Killebrew. Miss Tommy Killebrew, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine hearing that someone else has gotten out and going to get out of prison. and I'm blessed by talking to you because I never knew that you existed, and I'm very much happy that I am able to speak to you today up on behalf of my son.
Well, I'm happy to be able to talk to you because it's an honor to talk to someone like you who's willing to stand up and fight, because we don't get that too often. We don't get people willing to reach out, because they always thinking that something, what's going to happen to me if I do speak out. But your son got a story to tell, and I have one of the largest listening groups there is on Blog Talk Radio. And I want you to tell me what you want us to know about your son. And then at the end, I want you to tell us how we can help. If you could do that, you would complete the mission today. So let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your son.
Well, my son has been in the prison system since 1984 at Lakeland Facilities. And he was accused of robbing the DeFuels in 1984. And we found out that things were going on with the trial and stuff. We had an attorney that didn't do very much as far as I'm concerned. I won't call his name, but I do know that he missed going to court a few times. But it was stated that he was in the midst of some company, and they robbed the LaFears and held them hostage in their home. But we had no, they said that the evidence of them being there was they found a partial fingerprint in the snow on a beer can outside, and they had some fingerprints of somebody else on the inside. But they stated that the beer can was on some snow. And then they didn't bring that up in the trial, some things that have gone on, because they named two kinds of beer, Miller Lite and Miller. Well, they're in two different cans from what I understand, because I don't drink. But anyway, they didn't bring out the information. They said that they didn't have the beer cans because the beer cans had got lost in the snow. But my brother had went up to the place and got a chronological report that it was no snow on that particular day. And they said that they lost the beer cans, and it doesn't matter that they if they didn't have the beer cans or not, but they could still try him as a criminal in the offense. So we went from there, and the crime that he supposedly had done was just held the man in hostages in the upstairs, and the wife was supposed to be downstairs. But she had stated in the get-go that she didn't see him. She don't know anything about who he was or what the man looked like. And when the police got there, they didn't say nothing else about the crime with the fingerprints on the can, because they said that it was a trip up. My son said that the reason why they didn't do it, they didn't do it because they didn't have the evidence, so they couldn't prove it. But then after the trial, he been saying, I'm going to check out the situation by going. He been trying to get his own self out. And the lawyer even took me to court, but he was the one who didn't go up there. My daughter went up there. They held the hands over the husband and said, is this the guy that robbed you? He said, I'm not sure. But they still saying that he did it because they found a partial fingerprint. But they found no fingerprint because they didn't produce no cans with no fingerprints on it. They said they lost them, and they could try him anyway. So they tried him, and they gave him life.
The first one was a mistrial.
The first one was a mistrial, but they did it and tried again because he kept on. They didn't have no photographs. They didn't have nothing to prove that he did something. And they kept him. He's been in there all this time for robbery that they didn't have no proof of. the judge, he even talked to the judge's son, and the judge's son let him know that his daddy said that he, well, he didn't think he was going to be in jail for that long. So I'm like, if they ain't got no evidence, they ain't got no fingerprints, no photograph, no nothing, how could you have a partial fingerprint on a beer can that you never produced? So he's been in jail all this time, and he's been trying to get himself out because he know a little bit about the law. But the prosecution said that the finding of the fingerprints at the crime scene comes in the form of the weather data. And, everything they said has turned out to be a lie because they ain't had the beer can. They ain't had the didn't have no snow on them. They didn't have no complete evidence about nothing. But they still gave him some time over a beer can saying that he was there. Now, if other people were there, why wasn't he there? Why wasn't the other people tried?
We don't know about that.
They just saying that in the court because this is only evidence. My son has the papers and stuff, and he has sent me copies of what is going on. So I'm like, the documents mentioned, and he got those in writing, and I also have a copy of them, and two or three other people got copies. So we know what is going on during the court time. But he's just been trying and trying and trying, and nothing is happening. They had him in.
You missed the deadline.
Saying that he missed the deadline for his trial to be over with, and the appeals and stuff. So, because he's been appealing it forever and a day, and he wants everybody to know, you know, that they are trying to pin this crime on him. From the circumstantial evidence, they have none. That's why they didn't predict no beer can, no nothing.
Wow. And like you said, they couldn't identify him because the guy said he didn't know whether that was him or not.
Yes. But they still wanted to put him in jail and leave him in jail for it. And then he'd been in jail for 30 years. He got life. 20 years is life, but he got 140 years on another. But kidnap. They say that's kidnap. So I'm not understanding how could you put somebody in jail when you have no physical evidence and you can't identify the people who own the home. It don't have no evidence, but I'm understanding that they are a part of the Ford, Henry Ford's rich people, and they just want to find somebody to pin the case on to get it over with.
Absolutely.
Nobody was hurt or nothing. Nobody was stabbed, killed, or nothing.
I
don't understand how you can do that.
Well, you know what, Dave? We're so divided up. And
yes,
the reason they get away with it is that we don't stand together.
We can't stand up. That's right.
Here's something that's important. You see, your fight is my fight, you see. And
I appreciate you being in my fight with me.
Yeah.
I really do.
What we're going to do, we're going to get the family members together, and we're going to have a meeting, and we're going to be able to discuss our next step. I got some friends at the University of Michigan, the Innocent Project, who will help. And just by what you're telling me, I know it's the truth, you see.
I'm glad you do, because this is exactly what happened.
Right, and I believe that because I know how they operate. I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I know what these people would do. They would do anything to get you convicted and send your son to prison for the rest of his life.
Well, that's what he's doing, going for the rest of his life, because his innocent life has been going on in prison. Yeah. Forever to me look like, because I pray and I talk to him, and he keeps saying the same thing over and over and over again. And then, you know, if a person is lying, they'll trip up somewhere. He keeps reporting
Absolutely.
The same thing over and over, and I keep hearing the same thing. So I know that people will be dirty and low down because I had some problems with my brother when he was in jail in Birmingham, Alabama, and he was chumped up with some charges that we know wasn't true, but he got beat up and all of that kind of stuff. So it's still happening. It's just still happening.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
and like you said, people don't speak up. But like I tell them, I come here with a fight with the Lord, and he going to protect me. And if he don't, he can, and he will. I already know that. And I'm at the age now where I really don't care. I'm going to stand up for what I know is right.
Amen. Amen.
Mm-hmm. I'm standing up not just for my son, but I'm standing up for every black man that I see that's being misused and mistreated.
Absolutely.
In my neighborhood, they lie on you. They do everything. When they had the big four and everything, they did some stuff that you never could, you know, you never could imagine they would do. And I'm standing right there looking at them. And they have told me, what are you saying? And I had some people that were saying, girl, I wouldn't be saying that. I wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
I said, well, when it comes your time that you need help, you need to speak up. But we do need to speak up.
Absolutely. And people don't never want to speak up till something happens to them. Then it's too late.
That's right.
You see, this is what they don't understand. See, we need to start now, and we need to start organizing now. We got to stop. We're dealing with an evil empire.
But
yes, we got God on our side. We got God on our side.
Yeah.
And we gonna,
Satan is on the roof, but he's on the rampage. He want to destroy anybody that he can in any way.
Amen. Amen. And I tell you, we are going to fight and fight. And I want you to tell your son that I said this, that I am going to stand up for him personally to help him win this battle. And
all right.
And we win, you know. And I'm right now, I'm dealing with his bunkie. And we're doing all the things we need to do to help get him out. But we're gonna make this thing happen, Miss Killebrew. We're gonna make
all
it
right.
happen. We're gonna stay focused on the big picture, because you're dealing with the evil empire. When you're dealing with them, they look for every little thing to try to keep him in there.
That's right.
You see?
That's right.
But their strength. But here's the secret weapon: their strength and numbers. You see? That's what they don't want to do.
Yes, it is
with.
In numbers. It's strength. If you don't say nothing
and
you can't get nobody to stand up for what's right, we've got to realize that everybody counts. Because when it happens to you, it's going to be the same story. Well, nobody stand up. Well, if you stand up, then somebody else might stand up next for you. It's a wall with the world against whoever it is. But see, people don't realize, because they don't go to church, some of them, and they don't realize that Satan is on the wall path, and Satan get inside of some of these people, and they just be evil and dirty and low down. They don't know that they are hurting themselves. They don't talk to everybody. Man, you can't do nothing. You can't say nothing, because they'll kill you. Well, I'm at the point where if I got to go, I got to go, but I'm going down for the truth.
Amen. All right, now, I like that. I like that, Ms. Killebrew. You said that you're going down with the truth. But let me tell you this. We got over 150,000 listeners that listen to this Blog Talk Radio, and they're if they support me, they support you. I can't say all 150,000 will be in support of you, but I would say if they listen every week, we have a minimum of 150,000 people listening. And I tell you this much, we're going to do something, and we're going to do what we can, and we're going to find something that will help your son get out of there. And you can tell him that we will do this. Also, I don't want you to hang up. I'm going to bring in a young man from Philadelphia. He's a pastor, and he's also being persecuted. And I want you to listen to his story so you can get an idea of what's going on in the world today, because a lot of people don't get it. You see,
They sure don't.
Yeah. But listen, you stay with me. Don't leave me. But I want to bring in my good friend, Pastor Collins, from Philadelphia. And let's hear what he got to say.
Good evening, Reverend Pinckney, and good evening to all your listeners. It's just encouraging to hear that there are people fighting and up for the fight. You know, one of the things I've always taught down through the years is that you can't change what you don't confront. And sometimes as clergy and church and people of faith, we confine ourselves to the church. But the real battle, the real demonic struggle, the real struggle against the empire is outside the church. So I'm excited about you, Reverend Pinckney. I had your articles up on my door in my office even before I met you this past weekend. I had read about you, heard about you, and it was an honor for you to come to be with us this past weekend. And, yes, there was a great story published about myself, my wife, and our little church with less than 50 people. I was told it made national headlines. Some very horrible things were said about us. Accusations were made about us. And it was just striking because you never know how long or how envious and how people will wait, lie in wait to persecute you or to pounce on you. You know, I have a footprint of about 30 years working in the community, going to the prisons, helping people get out of prison, keeping people from going to prison, going to court. We purchased 3 houses on this block where our church is that we use for people returning home. We don't get any aid from the county, the state, or the feds. We feed people 3 days a week. So in other words, this is the kind of work that we've done for 20 years in Delaware County, just outside of Philadelphia. And when these accusations came about, it was complete and total shock, in complete disarray. We actually lost our freedom for a few days. We had to regroup and organize. But I'm here to tell you and all your listeners that we are reorganizing. Some great things have even happened since you left, Reverend Pinckney. But I thank you for coming to the rally those 3 days. It was very gracious of you to take time out your schedule. We had Sister Pam Africa with us. We had a Sister Margaret McKenna, who was one of the original Plowshare anti-war activists. We had Sister Sherry Hunkler from the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign and a host of other activists come and just share. People need to know what can happen when you take a stand against the empire. Many of our churches have mainlined, mainstreamed. And I always challenge people, Reverend Pinckney, if your pastor doesn't have a prison ministry, if your church doesn't have a social justice ministry, then you need to really bring that to the church leadership and ask them, why don't we have this? We're the most victimized people in this country. In any moment, any one of us is subject to be accused or to be accosted or to be racially profiled. So what happened to us, my wife and I, and our church is not uncommon. We know the history of COINTELPRO. We know the history of targeting those people that do have a boldness to stand out from the crowd. My profile, as I said, is deep. Dozens of articles written about me. I had to sue the county and sue the school district. They tried to tax our properties for 10 years. They did tax them for 10 years. We paid over $250,000 in taxes that we should not have paid. Everybody told me, Reverend Pinckney, we would never win that lawsuit, but we won. After 10 years, after 10 years, we won. So this is another incident. We will win this. Things are already being put in place even as we speak and other things which I'll share with you privately. But mobilization is taking place. The truth is coming out. And justice as well as, of course, the Creator, Almighty God, is on our side. So I want to encourage everyone to take up this mantle for justice, take up this mantle for the truth, and challenge those that have not done it. That's what we need to do, challenge those that have not done it. So thank you for this opportunity, Reverend Pinckney.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. You got a court date coming up on December the 19th. Can you
possibly
tell my listeners?
That date may be changed. So right now it's December 19th. I was just informed that it's possibly going to go into January. So people can pencil that in if they're in the area. If you're in the Delaware Valley area, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, possibly December 19th. If you want to contact us to get more pertinent information, I'm going to give a little information, Reverend Pinckney, if that's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so they can email us at response2injustice, RESPONSE, the number 2, and then injustice, INJUSTICE, response2injustice at gmail.com, and we'll be glad to keep you updated. If you want to contact us, you can text or call 267-251-0658, 267-251-0658, and we'll be glad to let you know the updates that are going on. So you have an email, you have our contact information. We did start a legal defense fund. Actually, we had planned to start the defense fund. We have been planning this for years because we've been helping people without any organized support, and we've been just taking money out of our little pockets to go help people go visit prison, to send money into Brothers Sisters Behind the Wall, to help people with the expenses that stay, that are family members that are on the outside. But now we have formalized that, and we have an account open. We have a Cash App, which is $LegalFund1. We have a bank account open for the Community Legal Defense Fund. So we can, when they contact us, we can make sure to get all that pertinent information as well as updates on what's going on. But I thank you again for the opportunity to just what we have to do, and you know this, and you listen, we have to change the narrative. Like the things that are happening with our dear sister, with her son, we have to live. The power is in the people, and just the power is not in the media. It's not in the media. We have too much respect for the media. The media knows that the power is in the people. That's why their propaganda is so strong, because the media is designed to act as that, you know, like the Wizard of Oz, you know, behind the curtain, you know, and you find out that the media is not as strong as you think they are once the people come together. So when the people come together, they can change the narrative and change the airwaves and the atmosphere and say, wait a minute, we need to reexamine this again, because everything that they said or about us or any other one of your the thousands of people that have experienced these things is not true. So we got to begin to change the narrative one person at a time. And that's already starting to happen, and I'm praying for all those that have similar situations, that we come together collectively and let's change this narrative and begin to print to put out a positive narrative, to turn the tables, to begin to question the authorities and question the people that actually did it, knowing our history. And see, a lot of our people don't know the history. A lot of our people have been programmed that if people say, particularly if they are if they're European, you know, then it must be true. I mean, I've heard that so many times recently. Well, if it's in the paper, it must be true. They wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true. They've always said things that weren't true. They said things weren't true about Malcolm. They said things weren't true about Bobby Seale. They said things about H. Rap Brown, Imam El Amin. Now, so they've said things about Geronimo Pratt. They said things about Matulu. They said things about Fannie Lou Hamer. So all of our heroes and sheroes have always been demeaned once they decide to take a stand for their people.
You know, you are absolutely correct, and we as black people, we know so much that we don't know nothing, you know. We
right.
don't even know how to figure out how to help each other, which is seems
right.
like the easiest thing in the whole wide world. If they knew for one second that we was going to stand together, you would have never been arrested.
Exactly, exactly.
If they
that's a good point, Grand Pinkney.
One second.
You know,
that's
because
all.
We're so captivated. I mean, I said this while you were here, and I've been saying it. You know, the people that we have helped for decades, I mean, help their children when they were in trouble, help them when they were, help people get elected, help people stay in office, help people financially. All those people did never to this day, they haven't called, they haven't emailed, they haven't even had somebody else call. You know, they haven't even said, well, I'm calling because of so-and-so. They don't want to call you, but they told me. They haven't even done. But you know what the blessing is? The people that I knew on the tangent, like the Pam Africas, the people that I knew recently, Sherry Honkler, people that are in the movement, people that are in the resistance, people that have known me from a distance but never known me intimately, they came to the forefront and said, Pastor Keith, I'm with you. Pastor Keith, tell me what you need me to do. Pastor Keith, we're gonna beat this. Pastor Keith, I'm standing with you. So that's where my heart was encouraged, because they had a plan to keep us in prison. You know, we got cash bail when we shouldn't have got cash bail. They sent us a special letter even after we came home, because we had to do several days in prison because we couldn't raise the cash bail. Then we got a letter saying they want to have a special bail hearing to try to put us back in prison. But by the grace of God and by the support of the people, that didn't happen. So as you said, when the people come together, the courts and everybody takes note. So I'm going to share this with all your listeners. The greatest nation is determination. The greatest power is in the people. Don't be frustrated or imposed upon by what you read or what you see on on television, you know. And I share this with people. A lot of our people are just hoping that they don't, that their day doesn't come. But you know, you can't hold your head down long enough, Reverend Pinckney. You can't, you can't get enough education. You can't make enough. We just had an incident in my county, 10 minutes from where you were with us. 10 minutes from us is a place called Chads Ford, Pennsylvania. It's a very wealthy, it's a millionaire place. Okay, us mansions out there. Okay, this brother, who's the exec, you might have read, he's an executive with a pharmaceutical company. He's a millionaire. Him and his wife was coming home to that million-dollar mansion, and the state trooper pulled him over in his own house because he didn't think that a black man was supposed to live in this kind of house. Pulled the gun on him. He could have died. Pulled the gun on him. He lived. He didn't shoot him, by grace of God. But that shows us that no matter what level, these, all these people that tell us, well, if you just pull your pants up, if you just wear, you stop wearing these dreads, just cut your hair like a normal person, learn how to talk, none of that means anything in a system of evil empire. This white cop, rookie cop, didn't believe that this black man was supposed to live in this mansion, pulled a gun on him, found out that he was an executive and a millionaire, didn't even show up. He got so embarrassed, they told him don't even show up for the, and wrote him some tickets to try to cover up what he did. He didn't even show up, so now it's going to be a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against the police. But I say that to say to all of, because there's probably, there's some people that's going to hear this and say, well, if we did this, there's nothing that we can do as black people to stop this system from targeting us. This system designed to target us. It's, that's what makes the system run, is the targeting of black people.
The system, and you know what?
You wouldn't have the jail money. You wouldn't have the court money. You wouldn't have the police money if black people were not priming the pump for the system.
Absolutely. I agree.
Look at the people that are being arrested for drugs. Now, they say 80% of the drug addiction is now whites and Europeans. But the people that are being arrested and doing time are still majority black.
Absolutely.
So we're priming the system. Anyway, we got the most vehicle stops. We got the most drug arrests. We got the most, we've got the highest prison population. So we're the ones that are priming the system. And I'm asking people to come out of their place. You know, some people are sitting on the fence. Excuse me. I don't know what I can do. The first thing you can do is speak up. I always tell people three things, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Reverend. Speak up, show up, and stand up. That don't cost
you
anything. It don't matter what your credit score is. Don't matter what's in your bank account. Doesn't matter how much education you have. Show up, speak up, and stand up, and we'll start seeing the change.
Well, Pastor, thank you so much for coming on. And once you know what's going on, I want you to take more time and come on and tell the audience exactly what you need to know. And I'm going to be pushing 100%. To make sure that people understand who you are and what you are. And
I appreciate that.
On that note, let's talk soon. All right. That's my good friend, Pastor Kyle. Hey, Pastor Kyle, please hang on. I got my good friend Lee. I want you to hear his story. He got a story to tell also, which is really, really intriguing. Then I bring in my good friend Gloria. All right. On that note, it's time to bring in Mr. Lee, the one and only Mr.
How you doing?
Lee.
How you doing?
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I'm back. And I'm rocking and rolling, trying to make it happen.
That's beautiful. Yes.
So what's been happening with you, Lee?
Well, I'm waiting on them to give me a court date right now, waiting on a trial. I kind of, you know, I was going through my paperwork, going through the discovery, you know, I read that thing faithfully. And
absolutely.
The more and more I keep reading it, the more I keep finding oddness of, like, I'm going to give you a prime example. The day of their so-called control by, they say, oh, he was driving in the black truck. Well, got the receipt from the shop. My truck was in the shop. But then throughout the entire paperwork that they mentioned this control by, they never put a time there when this supposedly had happened. So I'm asking my attorney, like, have you paid attention to that? Why is it that every single thing in this discovery has a time and date, but when it comes to this one particular, which is the most important thing, there's no timing. nowhere within the discovery of every time that they mentioned it, they never put a time. So, you know, it's more and more, like I say, that I'm finding out they really don't want me to go to trial. I don't know.
Well, they want you to plead guilty. That's what they want you to do.
Well,
they
know that's not an option for me. I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
I don't care what I'm faced with.
In every case, regardless what happens, I think you should take it to trial because I don't trust them enough. I don't even trust a trial. But I always believe in the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. I believe they would do the right thing because they took an oath to do the right thing. And then you have to force them to do the right thing. And I believe in that. I believe in going to trial. That's what I believe.
Oh, without doubt. And I think that's the thing that they kind of didn't expect of me. Like I say, my brother, he did it. He's like, man, I'm not even finna try to fight him. I'm just gonna plead guilty. I'm like, you're gonna plead guilty. I say, pay attention to what the judge told you. The judge told you, are you sure you wanna do this? Because everybody that says something about you gonna have to come face you. I'm like, he's trying to give you a hint, man. He knows it's some BS. He's trying to give you a hint, but he's like, I'm just going to go ahead and get it. I'm like, yeah, you're stupid. Me?
Yeah.
Nah, you got to find me guilty. I'm finna be laying down. Y'all know y'all lied. Everything y'all come out, y'all done found 600 and something grams of this. I said, well, why is y'all forensic report saying different?
Mm-hmm.
If your forensic report saying no controlled substance detected, then where is this mysterious 600 and something grams come from of supposedly cocaine? If your report
absolutely.
So, you know, the whole case, I mean, I see one part where it looked like they done white it out, retype something else on May 27th on it, but then the paperwork where they typed in May 27th, right after that, it said this month of April. I say, so was it April or was it May? Which one was it? I say, it seemed like it's a whole bunch of clerical errors going on.
Wow.
And, you know, my sister and them, one thing about them, they always, I love them, because they always like, if anybody knew you, they know you're going to fight. You ain't never been the one that just lay down.
Uh-huh.
I say, well, I don't think that they was thinking past go. Here it is, you got people, they trying to cover up for all these murders they've been doing in Detroit, robberies and everything. They know the police is involved in covering it up. The guy who everybody's saying, oh, yeah, this guy's the CI. Well, how the heck is your family member, your handler? That's a conflict of interest. So, of course, he's going to cover up everything you're doing. But then they don't, out of all these murders they done been doing, I wonder what they're going to say now about this innocent white man that y'all let these guys get away with murdering.
Yeah.
Is that going to get brought up too? He got hit in a crossfire. He was sitting on somebody's porch. But the police, of course, swept all of that under the rug.
Hmm. So the white guy got killed and they said nothing?
Yeah, they was trying to kill another guy. This guy named Stevie, they was trying to kill him. In the process of trying to kill him, the white guy got hit with their rounds. He dies. All of that got swept up under the rug. The chief of police, Deborah Hayes Price, this same guy who put in this whole little scheme together, I call them a band of snakes because that's really what they are. The guy that put the whole scheme together, he's the same guy that tried to kill another guy. That's when he shot up the chief of police house, Deborah Hayes Price. So it's like, dude, you getting away with a lot of stuff out here. But when you got crooked cops, and they're very crooked out here, especially in Detroit. I don't know how they crooked a lot of places, but the ones out here is vicious because they work hand in hand with them.
Absolutely, and they're not the only one who solve murders by giving innocent people murders They're not the only one. It's done all over the country. But in Detroit, the detective division have a history. If you don't tell on somebody, to give you a murder conviction, because they're going to convict you in court of that murder. That's what they do in Detroit. And
well, you know, one of the funny things you said about that, not to cut you off, is one of the guys years ago that he said, "Oh yeah, we were shooting off guns on New Year's. He got a fully automatic and this and that." And that he's bragging about this with this police, and he's the detective, the cop he's talking about.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine how many innocent people done went down with him and his family members.
Matter of fact, you know, they had an article in the newspaper about how they was giving people dead bodies that they didn't even commit the crime. And them people that they said it are still in prison today, even though they did not commit the murder.
And I think that's what they're afraid of right now, because they've been setting up people for so long. And just so happy, okay, now y'all done ran across somebody where we done convicted other people on these crimes, but he knows the truth about these crimes.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're afraid of.
Yeah, or absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
But that's what they do. They always get somebody to come in and plead guilty. See, they want you to plead guilty. That's the key word. Even if you didn't do something, they stack up the time so high, and then they offer you something even smaller, and you jump at it rather than say, "Well, no, I'm going to fight this."
Well, you know that's what they did with me. First they came and come out, you're facing 10 years. I said, okay, I want a trial. I want a speedy trial. Then they came back and said, well, we'll give you 3 years. You went from 10 to 3. I still want a trial. You know, everybody's just looking like, wow, you know, you really going to take it there? Yeah, I'm going to take it there, man, because it was a setup. You know, everybody knows it was a setup. Everybody knows what's going on. Why is it that
absolutely
the entire community knows what's going on? And the federal courts know what's going on, too. They know, they know clearly what's going on. Thing is, they don't like the fact that I'm willing to stand up to them.
Well, most black folks don't do it anyway. That's the thing. But listen, you got about two minutes. Tell us what you want you to know. That I got to bring in my good friend Gloria. Tell us what you want us to know, and how we can help.
Well, I'm waiting on this trial day. I'm still going to need as much attention to this as possible, for one, and two. To jump the subject, the previous caller you had on there, I noticed she was talking about her son. You know, there's a case, even though it's dealing with drug cases, that if you find any form of evidence that's outside where anyone can toss there's a federal case law that evidence cannot be used against you in the court of law. And several people did get freed off that federal case law.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we count on. Matter of fact, when she was talking, I understood exactly what she was saying. And I'm going to look into that. And see where we at, especially since the witness could not identify him. That's crucial, you see.
Yes.
So actually, yeah, that's crucial. People don't understand how important that is. If you can't identify a person, then how could you say that he's a person that did anything? Just because you law enforcement, you can't say that. It has to have a witness and a victim to say that this person did something. You have
exactly. And you can't use evidence where anybody could just walk past, as they say, even in, I will look the case up for you, where anybody could just toss it there.
Matter of fact, why don't you look at some information and send me some information in reference to that, so that way we can start working on this ourselves to help get this young man out. Because I believe from my heart that we're going to be able to do it. Matter of fact, I'm looking forward to this. This is I look at this as an opportunity more than anything else, because the key word was that the victim could not identify him. You see that?
And see, so that should have been enough right there.
You got a guy sitting at this table who you can't identify as the person that held you hostage or whatever it is, then what did he do or sit there? How
That's
did he come
true.
To this? You see, but a lot of times, see, if they thought for 1 second that black people would stand up and fight back, none of this stuff could be happening. You see,
yes,
as long as it's not
happening very true.
To you, yeah, as long as it's not happening to you, most people don't care. We wouldn't always
and that's, like that's usually how it go.
Fight each other. Yeah?
Well, you
wow.
know, it's sad to say, but we got more Sambos in this day and age than we do back in slavery.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I thought Ben Harvey had all the Sambos in the world at one time. But I was wrong. And I'm happy to admit that Ben Harvey, you're not the Sambo capital of the world, okay? I confess, you're not the... Yeah, they're not. Now, look at how we try to make them... Sambo of the Year, get them Sambo of the Year award and all that kind of stuff. Can't do it. Well, they were surrounded by them. But luckily,
yes.
I got to let you go. And let's keep working at this. Let's show these guys that we know how to fight. Let's show them that we know how to stand up for what's right. Let's show them that we can all work together. Because I believe that we can help Ms. Killebrew. I believe that we can find if I read the transcript, I probably could go even further to it because I'm pretty good at that. But the transcript has so much information, you know, you have to dissect it. You know, it takes months to go through it. So, but we're going to do what we can, Lee. Lee, you look up that part about the evidence for me and
I
email me that
will.
Information. Okay.
No problem.
On that note, Lee, I will talk to you during the week.
All righty, sir.
Take care of yourself. My good brother. Now I got to bring in my good friend, Gloria. Gloria, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, Reverend Pinckney, I am here. And we have to start connecting the dots, Reverend Pinckney. The minister that you had on, Pastor Keith, well, I call them Pastor Keith Collins.
Uh-huh.
I was in that church for 6 years. I left that church, just didn't go anywhere else. I wasn't searching. I wasn't looking. I just left. A year later, I became a targeted individual. I became targeted and tortured in Delaware County. And I'm not the only black woman in Delaware County that is being targeted and tortured. So it's a very demonic place. And they started working on me years ago, but I didn't know to what degree until June 15th, 2009. I went to stand up for a young man in our community. And when someone heard about it from Harrisburg, they called me. Her name was Ada Montaire. And told me, go to the meeting. The public has the first half hour. You go. In the process of that, three ministers from Chester, a neighboring town, called me and said, we're going to the meeting. That night, there was about 75 people that walked in the door behind me. And the judge, he was sitting there looking at me, the guy that was running the meeting, and he just kept looking at me. And I had a feeling he was looking at me and saying, who in the hell is this? These people don't come to these meetings and to bring in 75. And
mm-hmm.
from then on, when I look back, there was things that was happening. My car would get scratched and, you know, things like that. But then they really turned it up when I moved into Morton, Delaware County. And I know Delaware County is so totally involved in this. After years of research, I started in 2009. Out of all of the counties in the state of Pennsylvania, I think it's like 57 or something, Delaware County is number 4 in the number of hate crime groups. The Aryan Nation, the Ku Klux Klan, the skinheads. You name them, they have it. Media is the Ku Klux Klan is in media. And because I exposed that, I became targeted.
Yeah.
And it just seems, you know, I'm just connecting the dots. Now they go after my pastor and his wife. And they can do this. One day they can set up your money. One day I came home, I had all these overdraft charges. What the heck's going on? Well, the bank will get involved. A doctor will get involved. Every time I went to the doctors, they sent me to a mental hospital.
Mm.
So I don't go to the doctors. I have a naturopath doctor. You know, I just use nature stuff. Yes.
Yeah, amen.
So, you know, what they're doing, it's just all a part of their demonic protocol. And they can do it, it's targeting, and they go one way or the other. They get you either your health, your something. They have the technology to do it.
Yes, they do. And Gloria, here's something that's really, really important, that one of the things that I always try to teach is that, you know, there's always strength in numbers. I don't care how they, even if some of the people don't want to do nothing, they're strength in numbers, because that's what they fear more than anything else. Numbers, numbers, numbers. Numbers mean a lot. Believe me, they do. And one of the things I tried to do with the TI was make them understand how powerful they are when you all come together. And that's one of the things I do here at Benton Harbor, show people the strength in numbers. See, what I did here, I didn't just use the people here at Benton Harbor, because I know they're scared of their own shadow. So what I did, I went around the country and brought people in. And that showed power that they never saw before. So I think that's one of the ways that we have to connect. See, your issue is my issue. Pastor Collins' issue is my issue. Ms. Killebrew's issue is my issue. Lee's issue is my issue. If it's happening to you, it is happening to me, and I'm willing to stand up and fight with you, back to back, against, I don't care who it is. I'm willing to stand up and fight, and I'm willing to bring everything I got to the table to help you. That's how it's supposed to be done. And I've always been proud of you, Gloria. You always, you know, you always been there. Matter of fact, I think you came down here to Benton Harbor. You've been down here.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that. But this is how we do things, Gloria. We see they're strict in numbers. And we don't care about whether they like you or not, because people always hung up on who like who and who don't like it. I don't like him. I don't like her. We always talk about who we don't like. I don't care nothing about somebody liking me. I care less about that. I wouldn't give nobody that much power over me. Me worried about whether you like me or not. Come on, we got to fight. Let's fight. Let's get out here and do what we have to do. We'll worry about whether you like me or not after the fight. Then we'll deal with that. But that's the way I think that we should be. That's how we can defeat these demons and show them who we are. Stand up together, and let's bring these folks that's in jail home. Let's protect our target individuals. Let's do everything we can to make sure that we're standing together and they know it. That's how you do that, Gloria. And that's the
indeed
truth.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I really, really appreciate you. And I just want you to know that. And we're going to do everything we can to help Pastor Collins. We're going to help him. We're going to make this thing as easy as possible, because we know about these demons. They're there. And if they find a way to box us in, they're going to do it. So we
definitely.
Yeah. I was so glad to hear that you was a member of his church, and I'm really, really excited about that. I plan on bringing in all these churches from around the country to help. There is a few. It's about 2,400 of them. I figure we'll get maybe 5 or 6 of them to join us, because it ain't going to be a whole lot of them ain't going to want to do it. I know how they operate. We went down to Louisiana. And the head of the 2,400 churches, he was trying to get the people in New Orleans, the pastors there, to come out and support this issue. And he couldn't get down. He could only get one church to come out. Out of all the, you know, they had 30, 40 churches that was a member of his organization. He could only get one church. And they have a small congregation come out and support this. And he said, it's embarrassing. And I told him, I said,
well,
you know, it's all part of the fight.
Well, you know, Reverend Pinckney, we have to have a good understanding first. When we say technology, there is a document online. You go to stopthecrime.net. There is a document called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. We are in a quiet war right now. They have it laid out how they were going to take us down, even our communities. It's all mapped out. And what we have to do is overstand what's really going on, because they keep saying, oh, you blacks, you killing each other, you don't care. No, these young boys don't wake up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to go kill a couple people. They've been programmed, these towers and antennas. They're sending subliminal messaging, the chemtrails. You look in the sky, all this stuff, you just look and wonder. Well, it's killing us. It's all a form of mind control. That's what this government wants to do.
Yeah. Think about the new 5G they're coming out with.
That 5G, they said one area, I believe it was in Sweden, they turned the 5G on, birds dropped from the sky. They were cooked,
I believe,
and
that.
Dropped. Yes. Yeah. So we have to start paying attention, you know, and stay woke.
Absolutely. And
you know, because Reverend Pinckney, when we came to you, when the targeted individuals came to you, it was hard for you to grasp what was going on. But
you listened
to us. You took us on. The program started growing. People started asking questions. Now when someone says something, it's not a big surprise.
No.
We don't get that. Oh, you're crazy.
Yeah. And you know what? Without the target individuals, this program would not be as big as it is today. Matter of fact, it would really be because of y'all, your group. Y'all coming over here every week, and I giving y'all that free time to do whatever, say whatever you want. You're the one who propelled me to this level as I am on today. Because how do you get someone to listen to you on the radio for an hour and a half, for an hour every week is remarkable. I don't have the patience to listen to someone every week. You know, I don't. But I noticed that even my listeners, I'm always around 150,000, you know, even as high as 200,000, you know, people listening. And I'm excited. They're excited. They like the show. It's obvious because they, you know, we say whatever we want and they don't cut me off. So that's
okay.
I'm really amazed at that because they will cut you off. Believe me, you'll try to get on this show and you can't get on. Look, I'm down to 90 seconds, and I just want to tell everybody thank you so much. And I plan to, Ms. Killebrew, during the week, give me a call. Let's talk. Pastor Keith Collins, my goal is to make sure we touch base sometime this week so we can strategize and be ready for them. And Lee, I got you. And we're going to make things happen. Gloria, let's talk soon. And I want to make sure people understand how important it is for information to be given out. The thing is, we must stand together and fight together. Your fight is my fight. That's true, whether you like it or not. And my fight is your fight. That's the way it's supposed to be. Once we get that through our thick heads, we'll win every single time. And stop caring about who liked you. People are not going to like you anyway. I don't care who you are. They didn't like Jesus. So how you expect him to like you? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But we must make sure that we do what we need to do and stand up for each other and fight a good fight. And on that note, I have just ran out of time. Next week, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, the Pinkney Show. Have a good night. God bless you.
Peace.